Welcome to Season 3 of The Broken Banquet. Ashley's settled in Houston. I'm still in Costa Rica. But we're both really excited about bringing you more conversations about missions. We hope you'll enjoy this episode. Ashley.
Well, hello, Will Bailey.
How are you?
I'm so good. It feels like it's been forever.
It does kind of feel that way. And this is definitely the longest hiatus we've ever taken, but here we are again.
Yeah, for all of our listeners out there, this is the first podcast we've recorded since the end of October, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of dates us, but we're excited to be back in the saddle. I tried to, you know, how I always mix metaphors. I was trying to say something earlier about getting back on the horse, but instead I said getting back on the cart. But I think it's that you get off the cart. Yeah.
No, I don't think you do that either.
Fall off the cart, fall off the wagon. Oh, yeah.
Maybe. Well, you don't put the cart before the horse.
Ooh, that's good.
You do get back on the horse. But I don't know if you fall off the cart or the horse. I don't know, Ashley. I can't follow you. I can't make sense out of your mixed metaphors. I'm sorry.
Well, I appreciate you even trying.
So are we back on the cart? Is that what you're trying to say?
We're back on the cart. We're back on the cart.
Back on the horse. The court.
Well, good. Well, to get back on the horse.
We haven't missed a beat, Ashley. We just picked up right where we left off. Nonsensical mixed metaphors. But it's good to be back.
You know, I think there's something comforting about knowing that some things don't change. So this is good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, we wouldn't want to just come out of nowhere with a completely, you know, different mindset and outlook and methodology and actually make sense out of stuff. You know, that would be really disappointing for our listener.
Our one listener.
Do we still have,
hi, Mom.
Do you even know, have you noticed, like, do people even listen anymore? Are we starting over at zero?
Well, no, I think that there's a good Woodlands following now because they're trying to understand who that Ashley Goad is and like, who are some of the people that she loves. So.
See, I knew that was a good life choice for you.
Right.
And for our podcast.
That's right. Well, awesome. I'm excited that we are continuing in season three, that we're picking right back up. And we had some good interviews a few months ago, and now we get to kick back off with one of the best. I'm so excited to introduce someone to you today. He's become a quick friend of mine, and through all of the craziness of last year and that last 6 months, I heard from our guest today nearly every day. And he was constantly holding me in prayer and consistently being a friend and abiding with me. And so, Will Bailey, I would like to introduce to you my friend, Rifat Farig.
And nice to meet you, Paul. Thank you.
Yeah. I really wanted to introduce you to Will so that you could tell him a little bit about your story. I've given him the highlights, but he needs to hear who you are, Rifat, who you are, and where you came from. So do you want to just talk a little bit about your upbringing in Egypt?
Mm-hmm. I born and raised in Egypt, in Cairo, and we are seven brothers and sisters, usually in Egypt, especially the countryside. My parents came from the countryside and then moved to Cairo. The countryside usually have a big families. So we are five brothers and two sisters. So we moved to Cairo. I didn't born yet. When they moved before I born. So I grew up in Cairo. Cairo is very crowded. So, but I love Cairo. I want to visit here and there. So I grew up in Egypt. I spent a big time of my life in Egypt. So I met the Lord when we grew up as a Coptic, a Coptic background. And the majority of the Christians are Coptic background. So until my brother went to start to go to evangelical church, and he invited me to go to evangelical church. So I grew up in Egypt in since I was like 13, 14, I started to go to Evangelical Church, and I came here in 1999. So I married my wife, Hanan. We married in Egypt in 1997, and we came here to the States in 1999. And we got our kids. We have three kids. And 25 now, and he born in the States. The year we came to the States, we found out my wife is pregnant. So he's the first one born in Rhode Island, and the second one born in Boston, and the third one born in Boston. So so big part of my life was in Egypt, Cairo. And then we moved here, and since then we are here.
Would you share a little bit about what is life like, or what was life like for you during that time as a Christian in Egypt? Just for folks who maybe aren't familiar with that dynamic, obviously as a religious minority, I know there are times when that's been easier in Egypt than other times when it's been quite difficult because of persecution and things like that. So what was your, can you share a little bit just about your personal experience as a, yeah, sure. a teenager and young adult as part of the Christian community there?
Yeah, sure. The church in Egypt, the Coptic church, it called it the mother church, which is since Mark came to Egypt and start the church in Alexandria. So it has been more than two thousand years ago. So they called it the mother church because it's founded since the Mark went to Egypt early after Christ been raised from the death. So after the persecutions happens in Jerusalem, Mark went to Egypt and start in because as you know, Mark from Libya, from Qayrawan, Libya. So he went to Libya and then went to Alexandria, and he preached there and started the first church in Alexandria. Since then, the Christianity over there. In Egypt, we have almost 110 million. The majority are Muslim, and the minority are Christian, which is around, between 15 and 20 million Christians. And the majority of the 20 million are Coptic. The Coptic faith, like the Catholic Church, the Coptic, they have a mass, they have a priest, so the people going every Sunday morning, or now like it's Friday, because the Friday is the off day, so they go and attend the mass, and they leave. It's a traditional church. So I grew up in this. The majority of the Christian Egypt as a Coptic background. Even they go to the Evangelical Church, but our background is Coptic. So I go to Sunday school and attend the mass every Friday. It's a traditional church. I listen to the mass, and even I don't understand everything because in the Coptic language, the language is in Coptic. The mass is in Coptic language. So okay. Most people don't understand because the main language in Egypt before Islam invaded Egypt is the Coptic. This is the main language in Egypt. It was a Coptic language. So, but when Islam came, they prevent the people, the Christian people, to speak the Coptic language. And they put a creed that anybody gonna speak the Coptic language will cut the tongues. So preventing to speak the Coptic language and replace it with the Arabic language. Little by little, the Coptic language only in the mass. So I used to go to the Coptic mass and I don't understand, but that tradition, we have to go to the mass every Friday morning with my parents, and we have a nice Sunday school. I grew up I don't have any relationship with God. But I, as a religion person, religion boy, used to go to the Sunday school, and I have a friend there, and go on back home studying. So this is typical. This is not only my life. This is most of the Coptic people. They have a relationship with God, but it's not a life relationship with God. You go to the church and go back home, and separate life between when I'm in the mass or in my life, in personal life.
And socially, was it difficult to be a part of this religious minority? Were there stigmas or things that made life more difficult for you than if you had been part of the Muslim majority?
That church, since it started and Islam came, that church has been persecuted very much. So it's not allowed for us to build the churches. It's not allowed. Even if you want to do renovation inside the churches, we have to get the permission from the government to be able to do any renovation. Even if you want to renovate the bathroom in the church, usually it's, you find it's very difficult to get any permission to do anything in the churches. So, and there is usually persecution for the like in ID in Egypt, in the ID, you have to mention you are a Muslim or Christian. So once, if you go to any government to finish any documentation, if you see other Christians all the time, what you're going to do is not going to finish. So it's not allowed for the Christian to have high rank in the police. It's not allowed to be high rank in the army. It's not allowed to be a professor in the college. It's not allowed for many positions to be because you are Christian. So besides, like, some many times they burn the churches. Many times they bomb the churches during the Christmas or the Resurrection Day, when a lot of people go to the church, they find people like put a bomb and kill many people. So the church used in Egypt used to be persecuted. I remember when I was in the school, in elementary school, when I go, usually the class has like 30, 35 or 40 kids. The minority as a Christian, like 4 or 5 kids are Christian, and the majority are Muslim. I remember like one of the teachers was like mocking at us as a Christians. Are you guys worshiping the Prophet Isa? Are you guys believe that Jesus is God? So it's starting to mocking at us because we believe different than Islam. And I used to go crying to my mom, Mommy, I cannot defend myself. How come these teachers like mocking at me? And I don't have answer. I was like 7, 8 years old boy. I don't have an answer for that. So, and they force us to memorize verses from the Quran. This is part of the program, the curriculum in the school. We have to, so the church used to be persecuted. And until now, in any church, there has to be a security outside the church to make sure that this is the government, because they don't want to conflict between Muslims. And even so, and we live together. There is no place for the Muslim to live and no place to the Christian. No, we live together. Like, I remember the camp, I used to live in Egypt, like the big building has around like 100 apartments, like 60% or 70% are Muslim and 40%. So we live together. Even though there's a lot of persecution, hidden or appear to everybody. So the Christians all the time persecuted in Egypt. And as I grow, it's not allowed for me to speak with any Muslim about Christianity. It's not allowed for any Muslim to convert to Islam. He is the law. If you want to be a Christian, if you are Muslim background, you have to be killed. You have to be killed. So they have to leave the country. You have to leave the country if you wanted to change. On the other side, if any Christian wanted to be a Muslim, he got a new job. He got the money. He got like all everybody welcome him. So it's a lot of persecution in the churches in Egypt.
So when you moved to the United States, had you visited the United States before, or was moving to the US your first experience in the United States?
No, I did not visit the state before when I came here. It was the first time for me, and it was like my brother used to live here. He came a long time ago in 1979. So he invited the whole family to come.
Wow.
So we moved to the States and we lived there.
What was your first impression coming out of the situation that you were in Egypt and finding yourself in the United States? How would you describe that?
It's okay. You can say whatever you want. You don't have to. You don't have to sugarcoat it.
of course, a big difference. And usually, if you go to Cairo or any part in Egypt, it's a lot of people walking the streets. A lot of people. It's busy. Like in Cairo now, it has like 22 million. And the size of Cairo is the size of Rhode Island, because I live in Rhode Island. Rhode Island's like very, very small. It's like an hour by driving car from the first point to the last point in Rhode Island. And Rhode Island has 2 million people. The same size. This is in Cairo. Cairo has 22 million. So the people everywhere, day and night. So when I came to the States, I found out there is nobody in the street. Where's the people? so everybody in his car, of course, nobody walking the street. So it is like the ambition. But the good thing is I noticed, of course, everybody respects the rules. Everybody has the freedom to do whatever he wants. Doesn't bother the people, other people. Everybody has a chance. No matter what is their religion, what's the background, everybody has a chance to succeed and work hard. And be a good person, successful person. It's completely different in Egypt. Not everybody has the same chance.
I'm glad that that was your experience.
So, no, of course, we love here. We love here. And the kids loved here. Even when I talk them many times to Egypt, they don't feel like their country. You know, they don't feel like they belong to there, because they're born here. This is what they know. So it's a big difference, but of course everybody prefers to stay here in the States.
Can you tell Will and I a little bit about your journey from Rhode Island to then Boston, and then about your invitation to come to Houston?
We came in 1999, my wife and me. The reason we went to Rhode Island, that we used to work with Frontiers in Egypt, ministering with the Muslim background people. So we know them from Egypt. So when they know that we're going to go to the States, they said, okay, we have a base in Rhode Island as a Frontiers. Why you don't join us? Because you already work with us here in Cairo, so why don't? But first, if you like to be, we love, my wife and me, we love to be a missionaries. So before we come here, we visit Frontiers team in Bahrain. So we went to Bahrain, we stay with them for like 2 weeks with the team there. And we like the country as an Arab country. But we don't feel that God calling us to stay in Bahrain. It was a good time, but we feel peace that we're going to stay. We stay in Bahrain. So we came to Rhode Island and joined them for like 4 years. We work with them closely and spent very good time. We planted two Arabic churches in Rhode Island. And after 4 years, we felt from the Lord that that's enough. So this is, okay, enough. Where are we going to go? We don't know yet. We don't know many Arab people in Rhode Island. Rhode Island has very, very minority Arab people. So we stay for like 2-3 months, 4 months. We pray in God, where do you want us to go? And that time we knew that there is an big Arabic church in Boston. So we moved to be Massachusetts, the next state, to be in Boston. And we started to working and ministering with Arabic church in Boston. It was a big church, nice church, and the pastor is a very nice man. We work closely to him. And in the middle of our time in Boston, I felt from the Lord to study theology. So I asked him, I wanted to study theology. He said, yeah, that's a good idea. So I looking, where is the nearest? In that time, it was like 2004. So the online wasn't that easy like today to study online. So I found out that there is a big name college called Gordon Conwell in Boston and South Hamilton. So I went over there and I met with a person who, like, I told him I want to study theology. He said, that's a great idea. Where are you from? I said, from Egypt. He said, okay, are you going to study and go back to Egypt to minister there? Or you're going to... said, no, actually, I don't have a calling to go back to Egypt. I don't have a word from God to go back to Egypt, but I want to study. And I don't know what you're going to do with it, but that's what I felt from God. He said, okay, if you are sure that you're going to go back to Egypt, we're going to give you a full scholarship, because you're going to go back to Egypt and use this study to ministering in Egypt. But if you're going to see here, we have to be the tuition. And that time was like it's very, we don't have money. And I said, okay, let us start and see what God will lead us. I remember, like, many, many times, I don't have money to visit tuition. And I go to a nice, very nice professor called Tim Tennant. Tim Tennant now he's the head of
Asbury.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, yes. He's very nice man. So I got him, Dr. Tim, I don't have money to pay. So what, I don't want to quit. I said, okay, Rafat, go to the admission office and tell them, Dr. Tennant, send you here. And whatever you have money, just pay it and don't worry about the rest. So I go, and this has happened many times. So they cover my tuition because I don't have money. So I started to study. And I finished the first master of urban ministry. And then I continued to study. I jumped to the divinity, master in divinity. And then after that, I want to continue study. So I want to do doctor of ministry, mission and course culture.
You're so smart.
I love this. This field, mission and the cross culture. So it's part of our program as a doctor of ministry to have to go to Croatia.
Okay, that's right.
They have a place in Croatia belongs to Gordon Campbell. So we have to go spend 2 weeks in Croatia and go to the Eastern Europe and other countries like Bosnia and other country around Croatia. So we are 6 students, went to Croatia and 2 professors. Each one of them mentoring 3 of us. So my mentor was very, very nice doctor. His name is Dr. Dentelaz. Dentelaz, somehow God gave me grace before him. So he used to talk with me a lot about the ministry, about his history in the ministry, and his office was he's the head of the Baptist Alliance in the whole world. So his office was in Zurich, Switzerland. When he came back retired, Gordon Canwell told him, "What about if you study or teach mission program for the Doctor of Ministry?" He said, "Yeah, I'm willing to do that." So somehow we get connected together, and he adopted me as his son. Usually, all the time, he's asking me, "And how are you? And how is your family?" So we get close to each other. And while we're there in Croatia, he told me, "Rafat, I know that you have a good heart to ministering among Muslims or the Arabs." I said, "Yes, Dr. Lutz." He said, "Okay, I know a church in Houston want to start an Arabic church. Are you interested to do that with them?" He said, "Okay, Dr. Lutz, I love the idea, but I don't know. Let me ask God and let me ask my wife, because it's a big move from Boston to Houston." So he said, "Okay, when you go back, pray with your wife and then ask her and discuss it. And if you like it, I can connect you with the church and start." We left Croatia and come back to Boston, and I opened the idea with my wife. My doctor opened this idea with me. "What do you like? How what do you think?" And we prayed, and we felt that God pushing us to do that, like give us a peace to do that. So we went to meet with him, actually, both of us, meet them in his office, because he was not only teaching at Gordon Carmel, but he has a church. He was pastoring a church at that time. So we went to his office and we met him, and we told him we feel that God pushing us, like give us the green light to go to Houston and start the Arabic church. So he sent an email for me and the senior pastor for the church want to start Arabic church called Talaud Baptist Church. And until now, we meet there. And he sent an email for both of us. And then the senior pastor called me. He said, I received the email from Dr. Lutz. What about if you come and meet with us? So we set a time, and I went over there. And I came here, actually, to Houston. And I met with the senior pastor and the mission pastor and the staff at Talaud. And they made me, or they arranged another meeting with the Baptist convention. And we have a big meeting. And by the end of the meeting, he said, okay, when do you want to move? So it was a surprise for me. That's it. We agree, and we feel that that's God's calling for you to come here. So arrange with your wife and tell us when you want. This was in May 2011.
Wow. I remembered Gordon Conwell and your journey there. I didn't realize that Tim Tennant was one of the reasons that connection. What a beautiful connection. You know, he was just here for Beyond These Walls. Yeah.
And speaking. Oh, really?
Yeah, he was.
He was here?
I wish you could have seen him. He was here, yeah, speaking at the church. I know.
Oh, no. Yeah. I miss that. I miss that. Last time was last year, his books were there. He brought, mm-hmm. but he wasn't there. So I bought some of his books. But I didn't know that this year he was. Oh, wow. I miss it.
Yeah, he was the closer. He was the closer on the last day. But I remembered the Gordon Conwell piece. I had forgotten about the Croatia piece. That was of you going to Croatia. And that was when you heard about the church in Houston wanting to start the Arabic congregation or the Arabic service. It's a beautiful. I love how God works. God's just amazing the way he makes connections.
Croatia was a starting connection with the Wooden Church.
I remember that as well. I was going to bring it up because the Woodlands Methodist Church had a long history with the seminary in Croatia. Yes. And John Hull, who was the founding missions pastor of the Woodlands Methodist Church, happened to be in Croatia at that point. Is that right?
Yes.
And that, as they say, the rest was history. But what was that connection like when you met John for the first time?
We went there, the six students and the two professors. And Pastor John, he came with a big group from the mission team or the people. They came over there to arrange or to help with the library. Mm-hmm. So we his group and our group the only people in the whole building. So we eat together and I ask him some questions. He asked me some questions, and we got close to each other. And I mentioned to him that Dr. Lutz offered me to go to Houston. And he said, okay, what about if you come to our group? They used to have a night meeting or night meeting and prayer time every night. Every night. They go to a room, and this is John Hall. Has his group and do a prayer meeting. And he invited me one time to join his group and they pray for me to God, give me a clear vision, a clear voice from him if he wants me to. So I joined his team. So we pray together and get connected with them. So we stay and they left and I left and I moved to Houston and I forget about. With the moving, I completely forget. And one night I wake up, I said, he gave me his card. I said, I have to visit him. So I'm looking for his card. I didn't find it with the move and stuff. So I went online and looking for the Methodist, that time was United Methodist Church. So I look at his website and I found it. So I called asking for Jane, and Jane remembered me. Said, yes, I remember you, Rifat. So what about if you come and visit me and visit Pastor John? So I went over there, and this is like, I don't know what year it is. 2010, something like that.
Well, I do love the way that God weaves stories together. And so the fact that the Woodlands Methodist Church has always had a very big heart for theological education. So when they started as a church less than 50 years ago, that was what their missions ministry was all about, was how do we connect with theological educators, seminaries, Bible colleges across the world, so that we can pour into those institutions and those leaders so that they can develop pastors and leaders of the church in their own culture, context, and language. And then from the relationship piece of it was that they would send groups of people from the Woodlands to go to each of these seminaries to help set up libraries to help pour into the leadership. And it's just, it's been a beautiful thing for me to learn about. And then to see that connection, how it was woven through that John happened to be in Croatia with Jane Jordan, who I just adore. She's still on the mission committee. And that's how they met you, Rifat. And then as you moved to Houston, for you to be able to still be connected to our church. Blows my mind how God works in just wonderful connecting ways.
Can you describe a little bit what church life is like in an Arab Christian church in Houston, Texas? I'm intrigued. And I think you mentioned already, but if you would say again the name of your church, and Ashley, maybe if we could, I don't know if there's a website that we can link to in the show notes so that people can learn a little bit more about your church. But I'm really curious to know how your church sees the call to be a part of the community that you're in. Who are the people that make up your church body? But then also, how is your church body reaching out into the Houston community?
Mm-hmm. Our church called Arabic Baptist Church, and there is more than one Arabic church in Houston area. We are like three, and all of us speak Arabic. All the congregation speak Arabic, and the ministry in Arabic, and I preach in Arabic. So we have, you know, in the Middle East in general, we have 28 countries. And around 330 or 150 million people in the Middle East. The whole, all of them speak the same language. Different accents, but they understand each other. So,
Ashley, I think I finally figured out where I can come and do my Arabic immersion. Rifat, I started learning Arabic 3 years ago. But I live in Costa Rica, and no one in Costa Rica speaks Arabic. Yes. So now I can just come, and Ashley, I'm going to move in with you guys for 6 months or a year. I'll have to negotiate that with Yolanda. She'll probably prefer me be gone for a year. And I can just immerse myself in Arabic preaching and Arabic language theology. It's going to be perfect. This is wonderful. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
Would love to have you. And actually, my wife teaching Arabic. So she loves to teach you.
And even better. Will, this is a match made in heaven.
It's wonderful. Thanks, Ashley. Yes.
So our main ministry among the Arabs who speak Arabic. So our church includes, it's not only one country. Like, we have people from Egypt, from Iraq, from Syria, from Lebanon. So it's all of them mixing together and do ministry together. So we're targeting the Arabs who live in Houston, the Arabic-speaking people who live in Houston. And a lot of Arab people, especially the last few years when a lot of refugees came to Houston. So like yesterday, I went to, you know, Jeff, you told me that.
Yeah, Mission Centers Houston. Yes. Oh, yeah.
He has a partner. His name is David. David invited me to go. He has a ministry in high school here in Houston. So he invited me to go with him because this school has a lot of refugees from Afghanistan, Pakistan, and from the Arab world. So I went with him yesterday, and I met with the principal, he said, we have around 50 students speak Arabic. So what like if you like to like do a discipleship or any kind of help for these people. So there are people here, it's a lot, and to concentrate in some places. At the same time, they have to be close to each other. Usually, the Muslim people try to protect their identity as a Muslim, because when they come here, they see that they don't want, especially the parents, they don't want the kids lose their identity as Arab, as a Muslim people. So they try to get close to each other, live in the same place. Like if you go to any other any apartment complex, you find a lot of them are Afghani. A lot of them, like from Iraq, a lot of Syrian. So they like to get in close to each other, to encourage each other and protect their identity. So we have a lot of Arabs from Syria, from Iraq, from Jordan. So this country, they came here and established or stay here. The problem they're facing, they don't have a career. These people don't have a career, so and they don't know the culture here, and the problem is they don't have the language. So three big barriers when they come here to the state. So they need help. They need help. So that's why you concentrate with the Arab people who live in Houston, and a big number of them, and they need a lot of help. Which is our target for our, because actually I have the privilege, like I told God, I have the privilege to speak the Arabic, and I have the privilege to grow up in a Muslim country. So I know the culture, I know the language, I study Quran. So God use the atmosphere you put me. For these people who lived here, they left the country and they suffer here because of language, because you don't have a career, because you don't have a culture, they know the culture. So let me help them to like across this time for like a year or two or three, until they used to the culture, they used to the language, they used to have a career. So it's hard for them. Because they don't choose to come here. They force, many of them, they force to come here because of like the persecution, because the ISIS, because any other language, any other difficult time they have been in Iraq, in Syria, or in Egypt, or a lot of them suffer there. So they force to come here. Because their country is established, like they settled in the country. They settled. Nobody wanted to, especially this country. Like they have a family around, they have friends around, so they suffer a lot.
I can't imagine how comforting it must be to someone in that situation who has relocated for one of those reasons that you just mentioned into a country where they don't have the family connections or the social connections, don't speak the language, and just with the general political environment and things that are going on right now, it's got to just be a terrifying experience. But then to find someone like you, a ministry like yours, a church like yours, that can welcome those people in and say, first of all, we understand you, where you're from, and all of those things, but also that this is a place where you can rest and feel safe and find community. I mean, what an incredible gift that you are in a unique situation to be able to offer that gift in a unique way. You know, I'm sure there are people who are very compassionate and would like to also be able to offer hospitality and those kinds of things to those people who need it. But if it's someone like me, you know, a middle-class white guy from Eastern North Carolina, that gift giving is going to come across differently than the community who actually shares those same roots, who can say, no, here we are, and you know, we've been waiting for you, kind of thing. I just can't imagine. It gives me goosebumps to think about what that must feel like to someone who is sort of lost in that way to find a home, you know.
And actually, when you visit them, the needs are huge. It's not only material, but psychologically. Psychologically, it's a huge. When they come here with a big family, and the problem is that their kids. Their kids, they come here and they feel like lost. They lost in the community here. And there's a big gap between our culture over there for the kids and here. So the kids, they cannot control them, and they feel like they lose, and they feel like a big gap in the culture. And they try to protect the kids from the schools here, especially the high school and the middle school, and they have no control over their kids, and they fear from the future, and they have nobody, they have no relatives, this is like a few friends. So they suffer. So we try to help. Of course, we don't have everything we have to offer them, but the only thing we have to offer them, this is the main thing, is Jesus. Yeah, this is the main thing. We offer them to Jesus, and we usually try to tell them that you have to be resting in Jesus. And it's hard to go through the journey without Jesus. Of course, it's hard for them to accept it, because Islam is not a religion. Islam is rooted. It's identity. So it's not easy for them, but step by step, and we pray for them, and we try to let them feel comfort, you are in peace here. So whatever you need, we can help you. No, not with everything, but at least we are here. Try to help as much as we can.
And I think too, one of the things that I was telling Will about before we started recording today was how you still have a heart for the Middle East, and you have that missionary's heart. And so part of your ministry, even though you're in Houston now, is that you continue to go back and travel to the Middle East to share your gifts and graces with those that are there. Can you talk about your calling on these mission trips and why you go?
Yeah, some countries we go. I went many times to Europe to support or help the Arabic church there, and we go to the Middle East as well to help also the Arabic or Christian community there. I remember the first time I was traveling with your church, Pastor Ashley, and I have a phone call from Pastor John Hall. He told me, Rifat, do you like to go to Sweden? I said, see, of course. Who doesn't want to go to Sweden? I love to go to Sweden, but what am I going to do there? He said, we have a partner, ILI. We have somebody from ILI. His name is Yusuf Sarkis. I told him, I know Yusuf Sarkis. He is graduated from Gordon Conwell a year before me. He said, he's going to Sweden to help the Arabic church in Sweden. Do you like to join him? And they ask us if you have anybody speaks Arabic, try to help Yusuf. I told him, yes, we have Rifat, he can help you. So I said, yes, I would love to go with Yusuf. And we went over there, and it was a very good time. It was the first time. This is many, many years ago. I went with ILI. So actually, your church opened the door for me to travel. It was like out of, I wouldn't know anybody in Sweden. So we went over there, Yusuf and me, and helped the church in the Arabic church in Sweden. And then we opened another door. ILI used I go with them every year to different countries to help the Arabic speakers or Arabic churches in these countries. So I went to Austria with them to help the Arabic church there. And I went to Germany with them, and I went with them to Morocco 2 years ago to help the Middle East. We're helping the people who already became a Christian, because like if you go to Morocco or Tunis, there's no Christian community there. The only Christian community is the people who already converted from Muslim background. So we go and do a conference for them, and we encourage them and pray with them, and they give like a boost to them. Mm-hmm. So I went to Morocco, and go to Tunis, Tunisia. Went to Lebanon, and so we went to our church. They sent us to Iraq, to Erbil, twice to help our partner there in his ministry. God opened doors for me and other people from my church to go outside mm-hmm. Houston and help the churches to give them encouragement, praying and telling them that we are beside you, we are with you. Yeah. To help you as much as we can.
Will, it's almost as if God has called Rifat to abide with other Christians around the world for encouragement and for prayer and for love, because to let them simply know that they are not alone in their ministry and in their leadership as God is calling them forward. So I just like that full circle moment.
Yes, I love that, yes. I would love, actually, it's not binding. I know we're binding with this a part of the church there. But when I ask God, like I feel like I'm very small to go to these churches, either in Europe, the Arabic churches in Europe, or in the Middle East. What are you going to tell them? I have nothing to tell them. And he usually encouraging me when you're getting close to me. And in other meaning, when you abide with me. When you abide in me, you can help these people. So we are only a vessel, but vessel cannot offer anything until the treasure in this vessel. When you're getting close with God and when abide with Him, I can offer whatever God put in my heart to.
Amen.
And that's why I wanted you to meet my friend, Rifat.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for introducing us. And I look forward, hopefully the next time I'm in Houston visiting Ashley, I would love to meet you in person and to meet your wife and maybe talk her into teaching me some little bit more Arabic.
Yes, I would love to.
Ashley, I was sitting here thinking just about the purpose of these conversations, redefining expectations with missional relationships and helping churches kind of lean into being creative and all of that, and just the position that you're in now and the opportunity that your church and that you have of making these connections, these missional connections that in some cases result in, you know, firsthand physical opportunities for people to engage in ministry together. But in other occasions, it's just connecting people so that they can go and do the work of abiding. You know, before we even started, I asked you, how is your church directly related to Rifat's church? And it's because I was still sort of working under that same kind of assumption. But as we've talked, I've realized that sort of even just the behind the scenes, making connections and opening doors and introductions and things like that. Like sometimes that's what is needed and, you know, at a particular time in a particular situation, so that one or two steps down the road, incredible ministry can happen. So I'm really excited for you, Ashley, that you are sitting where you're sitting and get to, you've always been a connector and love introducing people. And so it just seems like the perfect fit.
Mm-hmm. Connecting people I love to people I love. It's been so great.
Actually, I have the privilege to know you, Pastor Ashley, and I have the privilege to know your church. And I want to tell you that you do a big difference in our life as a family, in my life as a minister and in our church. So in our ministry, so you do a big difference with like a one of many, many people you support and caring and praying. So you do a big difference in other ministers' life. So I really appreciate to know you as a person and I know as a minister. And I feel like I have the privilege and I have the honor to know you.
Likewise, and, friend. Likewise.
And I think you are one of the good points, and this is a strong point you have, that to abide the people together, mm-hmm. with God and with each other. So it mm-hmm. is, thank you.
I think that's a perfect way to sign off today, Will.
Yeah, Rifat, thank you for abiding with us. Thank you for being on the Broken Banquet. Can't wait for folks to have a chance to listen to the conversation that we've had.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
Ashley, all right, Will. Another one in the books.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye, Will.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Broken Banquet, a podcast by Will Bailey and Ashley Goad. Music provided by Irene and the Sleepers. Join us next week for another episode. He's prepared the table. All things are ready. Come to the feast.